Hi, I'm Annette Diabrio, UK Managing Director at Suter Group, and this is the original Suter Group podcast. Today, I'm joined by Suter Group's Performance Marketing Director, Chris Webster, and Marketing Director, Andrew Smith. We'll be discussing the power of Google and Amazon when used in synergy to fuel digital growth for health and wellness brands. It's a common misconception that the e-commerce giants are competitors in the digital space. But here at Suter Group, we have developed innovative ways to combine both approaches to unlock incredible growth for brands in the health and wellness landscape. So, what is performance marketing?
So, we see performance marketing here at Suter as the strategic use of digital advertising tactics, essentially to drive sales, brand awareness, and ultimately complete that marketing strategy. So everything from website optimization, from pay-per-click advertising, right through to social media, in fact. There's a variety of tactics that can be used sort of in isolation or as a collective to ultimately drive that performance and essentially accelerate market penetration and also the rate of sale as well.
And are you, as a consequence, seeing a big increase in companies investing in this area?
Certainly with our client base, we are, yes. There's a recent report published in 2022 where UK brands essentially increased their performance marketing investments by 16.2% versus a 2.9% increase in traditional advertising. If we take a step away from that as well, from a global perspective, over the next 4 years, it's likely to double in the fact that more brands are essentially going to invest within performance marketing.
And why do you think that is?
Essentially, it's a fundamental change in terms of it's cost effective. It's the more efficient in terms of a marketing strategy. I think the first point to cover off is enables that test and learn methodology. Now, if you take a recent client's example we've been working on recently, it was a healthcare brand, supplements. Now, the model they had in play was a site where purchase can be done through the website. It could also be done through a subscription model as well. So what we did, we analysed essentially all channels we were working on. We took a step back and had a look at Google advertising versus Facebook advertising. What we found was the repeat purchases via the subscription model was essentially driving better via Google. So what we did was we redistributed that budget and essentially reforecasted what we invested in Facebook and pulled that back into the spend where we invested in essentially Google advertising. Okay. So essentially what we can do here is you take that unique blend, look at what's performing, what isn't, and really understand where to invest that budget essentially.
And that sort of granularity of understanding is so important, isn't it? Because otherwise you could just be investing in the wrong area, and it's that knowledge and that data, ability to look at the data.
Exactly, and I think that's key to it. I think the second point is around technology.
Yeah.
One of the biggest advantages of performance marketing is the ability to track, is to data analyze on a real-time basis.
Yeah.
And essentially that's what enables marketers to do. They can analyze every return for every pound you spent across the marketing spectrum, understand what's working, what isn't, and again, readjust those budgets accordingly.
And just linked into that, I guess, we've been talking in general about how everything is changing and people's behaviours are changing. So this has got to be just a continuum of reassessing, hasn't it? You can't sort of sit on decide that's it for the year. It's got to be looked at consistently.
Exactly. I think that's another, it's a really crucial point, is it's that continual consumer.
Yeah.
Essentially behaviour change. And it's very much, especially when it comes to digital content consumption, across multiple devices, people are doing it more than ever.
Yeah.
And it's a case that they can go away, they can conduct research online, they can go and purchase offline.
Yes.
So having that consistent end-to-end funnel approach to a strategy really pays dividends.
So Chris, a bit more on performance marketing, please.
Yeah. So I mean, without doubt, our clients are seeing good returns on investment from performance marketing. We're seeing that across a number of different categories within the health and wellness space. Clearly, from a healthcare perspective, pharmacist recommendation will stay absolutely paramount, as will a listing in one of the largest bricks and mortar retailers often. But yes, without doubt, we are seeing good return on investment from performance marketing within healthcare.
Great. Which takes us, the word funnel takes me on to full funnel marketing, Chris. Yes. Could you explain to us a bit, what is full funnel marketing?
Full funnel essentially means that you are, you're impacting the consumer journey right the way through from the initial awareness as they become aware of the product, through into consideration, and then on to conversion from there. And then there's one further step, which is about retention and making sure you get that repeat purchase, etc. So full funnel marketing is making sure that you impact the whole of the funnel strategically at different points in time.
Okay, so then what is the difference between full funnel and multi-channel?
Full funnel from top to bottom. Multi-channel means that you're implying those tactics, you're implying that you're applying those investments across all of the different mediums that a consumer would search for that product. Mm. So may that be Google, may that be Amazon, or increasingly so, may that be Boots.com, HollandandBarrett.com, etc. It's that multi-channel approach.
At Suta, we've been getting some interest now from actually quite a few US brands who would like to come over and launch, who have been very successful in e-commerce in the US.
Yeah.
And want to come over here. So why do you think that is?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing that. That's right. They're viewing the UK as the first step on their international expansion, particularly those brands that have a good digital presence in the States. Size of market would be one. The UK is a significant size, but I think it's more than that. I think it's about the low risk that it represents. Both of the markets are very similar. They've got similar digital ecosystems to them. They're both very Amazon-centric, very Google-centric. Mm. And of course, what that means is that if you've got that optimum blend of performance marketing through the funnel that it's worked in the States, the chances are that it's going to be fairly similar model to the UK. Mm. And of course, you would apply your test and learn methodology that Andy was talking about before to make sure that it's absolutely right. Mm. But it means it's relatively, it converts over relatively well. There's probably another couple of reasons. Firstly, secondly, you've got the digital asset library. So if you've created an asset library that works for you in the States, there might be some tweaks with tone of voice and things like that, but by and large, it'll work.
Yeah.
And then there's a slightly more technical one, which is about Amazon ratings and reviews. So if you've built up your reviews, your ratings, reviews, your strong metrics in the States, you can import those over to the UK. Pardon me, import those over to the UK. So even before you've sold anything, it means that you've got high up the organic rankings, and it means you can get off to a really fast start.
Yeah. I mean, I think also that all of this assumes that the regulatory piece fits as well.
Yes, that's
and you can make the claims, and which isn't always the case. So that sort of pre-work, pre-assessment needs to be checked out before it gets to you.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's right. That is a big watch out. I mean, take vitamins brands, there's lots of things you can say in the States that you just can't say in the UK. And when it comes to
levels of active as well.
Yeah, they can be different from a registration, from a classification point of view.
Yes.
Just because it's a class 2 medical device in the States doesn't mean that it transfers over.
Yeah.
So you need to talk to experts who know that, who can give you advice on that. I think the other watch out actually is route to market as well, which can be very different in the States. The US is a lot more sort of marketplace focused.
Yes.
So if you take the likes of Walmart, they've got marketplace now that they're offering. We're not quite there yet in the UK, but of course that changes your whole digital marketing mix as well.
So this is I think it's a difficult question to answer, but what therefore, regardless of where the brands come from, what would be the best blend of investment?
Mm.
Or are you very much doing the analysis first to work all that out?
Yeah, so I think it very much depends on the brand. It varies, but also varies depending on the channels where we think we can see that success. I think it really comes down to three key factors, really. The category being one, the competition, and also the price point. Say, for example, a premium brand with a high cost is looking to enter that market versus a new line from an existing brand, which is essentially competitively priced. We know that blend of investments will be totally different for each sort of route to market, and that's the key thing to consider, is understanding what's going to work best, how much investment you need per channel, and ultimately how you then enter that marketplace effectively.
But it's about that test and learn methodology,
isn't it?
So you may start in a particular place, but as you start to realize that a particular blend of investment up and down the funnel and across the funnel is working, you would dial up or dial down accordingly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I give you an example, we've recently done some work for a blister plaster brand in the UK. We wanted to really get those consumers down the funnel from the sort of the awareness side into consideration, into conversion. So what we did is we looked at all of the people who on Amazon who'd bought high-heeled shoes in the previous 2 months, and then we served them with an advert for this blister plaster. So that in itself got good cut through, and then we managed to send them a sample as well. But that was significant penetration for the growth. And it's about just doing things a little bit differently. Yeah. So that was that programmatic targeting example. But yes, it's about dialing up and dialing down when things work for you.
Yeah. So, again, another big question, but how does it work?
How does it work? Well, okay, I think you touched on it before. It's about having visibility. It's that data analytics piece. So that if you wrap up the whole funnel in these metrics and you've got good visibility and good robust metrics that go through, so you can have a look at those conversion rates, those click-through rates, those repeat purchase rates, that enables you to apply that test and learn methodology. If you don't have that, you're sort of shooting in the dark a little bit.
Andrew, anything to add to that?
Sure. Let's start with awareness. It's very much the top of the funnel here. It's very much the case when a potential customer comes aware of a brand or a product. And in most cases, it's for the first time. Mm. So having that sort of initial kind of viewpoint is very important. Just make sure essentially we start that journey off in the right way. So everything from sort of a website message through to a content or creative, ensuring we have that sort of touch point across each of those sort of mediums is crucial to make sure we kickstart it in the right way, really. I think if you talk about consideration and that stage, it's very much all about the consumer. They're at the point where they're interested. They're looking to conduct research. They're looking to go out there and find solutions or answers to their needs or requirements. I think that's the crucial part of it. It's being there at that point to answer that question or query. A great example of a strategy that we use at Suta is user-focused content. So we go away and truly understand what they're looking for at this stage and look to create a content strategy that essentially answers those questions, provides that level of information where they can go away, take it away, digest it, and then return once they understand that, right, that's the best brand for me. And it's also really beneficial to that end journey. It's that consistent narrative from awareness to consideration, which takes us through to essentially conversion at that point. Very much at this stage, it's all about that execution. That end goal is essentially that point of sale, that conversion.
Yeah, well, when you get down into conversion, that's where sort of key search term bidding really comes to the fore. So if you want to be defensive as a brand, you might invest in your own brand term. If you wanted to be disruptive, you might invest in the competition, which means that you can steal that conversion right at the last minute. But, you're getting right down to the bottom of the funnel at that point.
Yeah, good.
And then, of course, it's retention after that. Yeah,
yeah, and that's very much at the bottom of that funnel. It's essentially that longevity. Really analysing sort of lifetime customer value in that sense, looking at repeat purchases using mediums such as email marketing, for example, smart drip campaigns over a 3-4 week period to entice that ongoing subscription, for example. If we take a step back to the supplement example I said earlier, it's very much a part of their process is to get that long-term customer. So having those mediums coupled with, say, paid social advertising, making sure they're fully aware of the benefits of that product at that point in time, it essentially makes the end product, that end goal ultimately is to get that customer to repeat purchase.
And that's the key thing. And that's, of course, where Amazon Subscribe and Save often comes in handy, because that's a very, very good mechanic for getting repeat purchase.
I mean, the quest for brand longevity and brand growth is still the same, and it's how we get there changed.
It's the channels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to the setup you have in place. I think if marketing channels are being managed by separate agencies or within silos, for example, it's very difficult to kind of manage the performance of each of those and essentially learn from each of those points and feed that sort of knowledge or expertise across each channel. Now, it takes a really skilled sort of brand owner in that instance to collectively bring that together, for example, sort of managing those different points of contact, but also at the end of the day, driving performance and ultimately sales in that sense.
I agree. Without doubt, brand owners are looking for that one agency to manage the entire funnel under the one roof. Because if you've got a variety of competing agencies, they're all competing for that investment, and it's not going to be the optimum blend at the end of the day.
But also, there are learnings that are important to communicate really, really quickly. So you might get something and understanding that could actually affect a bricks and mortar listing, for example, and vice versa. So I think that's one of the important things about that fluidity of communications and understanding. When things move so quickly in this digital area, it can be incredibly powerful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yes, linking it into that bricks and mortar piece is really, really important as well. You shouldn't view this as just digital investment. This is your overall investment.
Overall investment, regardless of where the consumer goes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can see specific market data that will show online has dropped, bricks and mortar has grown, or it might move the other way, and it depends on the category. So, exactly.
Yeah, that's right. But even if you've chosen to go with just a digital launch, which some brands do, of course, that's just setting you up for future bricks and mortar listings after that. Because if you can prove that you've got good rate of sale, good lifetime value, good repeat purchase, of course, when you go to negotiate that commercial set with the bricks and mortar retailer, it means you're going to be in a much stronger position.
Absolutely, yes you do. Good. So a question, Chris, that we are being asked quite a lot is just our approach to AI.
Mm.
And we're pretty much working with AI in everything that you're doing, you and your team, Andrew. It's embedded in so much of what we do already.
It is. I mean, I think it has with Google been embedded for a while, longer than it has with Amazon, actually. I mean, AI or machine learning with Amazon has really only come to the fore in the last, say, 3 or 4 years. But brand owners now, increasingly use AI to just optimize their key search term bidding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be done either through time. I mean, if you're, it's less resource cost if you're using AI, but time's also important from a time of day. So if you're using AI, you can optimize your bidding strategy over a full 24 hours of the day rather than just the working day.
So Chris, could you give us an example without naming names?
Yeah, sure. So we used AI very effectively recently to get some good return investments from a baby category, because we found out that that mums and dads were searching in the early hours of the morning for a solution to this problem.
Mm.
And actually, you're getting some pretty good bids in at that time, some really good return on investment. So we massively managed to improve our cut through as a result.
Which is not a surprise to any mums and dads watching this.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you. Just before we go, is there anything that you'd like to add? One final thought?
One final thought. Well, I've got two, actually, if that's okay.
Well, not surprised?
I think, you know, we've heard a lot today about performance marketing and how to optimize campaigns. But I think I'd say, make sure you've got the fundamentals correct before you do that. Make sure that the product's going to be delivered properly to the consumer. Once they've clicked purchase, if you haven't got that bit sorted out, there's a lot of the rest which is wasted investment. So from an Amazon perspective, make sure that you've got 1P versus 3P versus hybrid. If you're going to do a website, is it going to be D2C or is it going to be a catalog website? Lots of considerations before you start investing.
Good, thank you. And what was your second?
The other thought would be, if you've got a UK-specific strong performance marketing campaign going, there are lots of other Google-centric, Amazon-centric companies out there that you can take that formula and move it over there as well. So France, Germany, etc. have had a lot of success of moving into Europe from the UK.
That's a nice point. Thank you very much. Andrew, did you have another thought?
I think the final point for myself is around data analysis. The amount of data now available, couple that with generative AI, artificial intelligence in that sense, it's taken a step back in terms of that old school methodology of manually kind of optimizing campaigns, and it's understanding what that sort of machine learning can bring to the table, really. And it's all about listening to that and understanding what we can make of it. Because at the end of the day, we're looking to maximise budget here and where we spend effectively and on the right channels. So I think that's the key to learning, really.
It's such a dynamic area. It's so exciting. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you, Annette.
Thank you, Annette.